But first, and he's only available to us for a limited time here, so we're taking him during this time spot here. We are grateful and appreciative that he is joining us. A legendary, a musician with a legendary career here. Somebody who's just crossed genres, done a lot of different things here. I speak, of course, of Steve Smith, who was the drummer for all of the Glory years here during the time when Journey was together, and subsequently has done a lot, and he's sort of returned to his roots, so to speak, here in terms of jazz music also, and really just done an incredible amount over the course of his career. To join me for this also, our good friend Tony Mazur from the On Tour Music Show here, and also a member of the FDH Lounge here. So, Tony, welcome to the program here.
Good evening, Rick. It's I'm glad to be back up here after my little hiatus. I guess that's what we call it. But, yes, I'm back, and I'm glad to still be a part of the FDH family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good to have you in. And I knew this, again, given your participation on the music show and your knowledge and everything else here, I knew you'd want to be a part of this. Again, really grateful to be able to get this gentleman in with us here tonight. A very varied career that he has had, and in, as I say, several musical fields, and he is touring this summer with some drum clinics. We're going to speak on that extensively here. Speak, of course, of, could only be speaking of Steve Smith, legendary drummer. Steve, welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hey, Rick. All right, nice to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you in, Steve. And I tell you what, let's start with what you're doing right now, and we can talk about that more as well here. But the drum clinics that you're going to be having this summer. I understand you were in the greater Cleveland area this past week. We mentioned it on last week's show, and I understand you're coming back, but you're also doing an awful lot in other parts of the country as well.
Well, what's going on is the 30th anniversary that I've been playing Sonar Drums, which is a drum company that I've been endorsing for a lot of years now. And so they've made a 30th anniversary kit. And what they did is to promote this, you know, Steve Smith 30th anniversary kit, is they booked me 57 clinics around the world.
Wow.
So we just started 2 weeks ago, and we did basically what we're calling like the East Coast of the U.S., which, you know, included Cleveland and Nashville, as well as Maine and Florida, and all points in between. I'm heading to Canada tomorrow, and then I do two tours of Europe, and then down to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, China, Russia, and then in November I'll be on the west coast of the U.S. and Canada. So they have me working a lot this year, along with, you know, fitting in my other bands that I tour with as well. So it's a pretty crazy year, which is pretty normal for me.
Yeah, that really does cover a lot of ground. I mean, when you're looking at all the areas that you're going to be going to, I mean, I guess it's almost comparable to some of the musical areas that you've covered here, because you know, you've really done a lot, not just in rock, but it looks like in several kinds of jazz also. Jean-Luc Ponty doing some stuff with some of the musicians from Buddy Rich. I mean, you've really covered many different genres over the course of your career.
That's true enough. And, you know, it all started when I, in the 60s, I was growing up, and I was a big jazz fan, and that is the foundation of my musicianship. And with that foundation, I have a lot of options available to me, because with the jazz training, I pretty much can play just about any kind of music technically. Then it's just a question of me really understanding what it's about, and then getting involved in doing it. So I've had the opportunity to play, you know, like you said, Jean-Luc Ponty, great jazz fusion violinist, to, you know, of course, Journey, to everyone from Mariah Carey to Andrea Bocelli, and country stars like Ray Price even. So, you know, as long as I have that background musically, it's pretty easy for me to understand what's going on around me and adapt to the situation.
You know, with that foundation, Steve, because again, there are a couple different types of jazz that I like to listen to here, so I'm familiar with it a little bit. again, and this is I don't mean this in any way as a put down of anything in the rock genre, but as you started to get into that, was it a little bit easier because maybe you'd done some things that challenged you a little bit more before you got into that, or did you find some of the rock music you were doing to have its own kind of challenges? What are some of the kind of comparisons here?
Yeah, that's well put. The rock music has its own kind of challenges as far as since I did grow up mainly playing jazz, but of course because of growing up in the 60s and then playing music starting in the late 60s and the early 70s, rock came rather easy to me because it was just part of the culture, and so it was very natural for me to play it. But I'd say one of the differences, since jazz is a music that improvisation is a key element, and having a listening and response type of situation where I'm playing with other musicians and we're all bouncing off each other, and it's something that's happening in the moment. The biggest transition with rock is for a lot of it really doesn't entail that. That's not happening. It's very composed. The songs are the songs, and the drum parts are part of the composition, and so I had to discipline myself to really play the parts and stick to the parts and not, force that sort of jazz aesthetic onto a rock situation. And of course, so that was its own challenge for me, and I learned a lot and developed a lot as a rock drummer, rock musician. But I choose to spend my time playing jazz because it's a lot more fun for me. It's simple as that. As an improviser, I enjoy playing a music that has more spontaneousness and freedom to it.
Now, growing up being a drummer, how were you discovered? I mean, we know what your success with Journey and everything, but how were you discovered? Like, did somebody say point you out to any kind of band, or were you just playing on just, because I know a lot of drummers, they play in a bunch of different bands.
Right. The word discovered, I don't think it really applies in this kind of situation, for me anyway. It's a long and slow and logical process of one gig leading to the next gig to the next gig. And like any business, it's all built on personal relationships and because I had some good ability and I was able to get my foot in the door, which started basically by being a music student at the Berklee College of Music. And so right out of high school, I went to the music school in Boston. I networked and met people and got gigs and went on tour. And I toured with Jean-Luc Ponty through a connection. Somebody helped me get an audition. So I got an audition. The guys in Journey heard me play with Jean-Luc Ponty, and then I went out and played with other people. I was touring with Ronnie Montrose for a little while, and we were opening for Journey, so they heard me play, and then I met them and talked to them, and it's just like anything, you get to know people, and we felt as though it would work. I felt comfortable with them, and certainly they felt comfortable with me, and at a certain point they asked me to join the band. So it's just, as far as my perspective, it wasn't like some kind of overnight discovery. It was just a process of moving from one gig to the other.
So establishing connections, that's what you would say would be the most important thing?
Well, the most important thing is that you play great.
Oh, true.
you can't overlook that. You have to have a lot of talent and have it develop, so when a situation is offered to you, you have the goods. So, but, let's consider that you are a talented player. Yeah, the next thing is it's a word-of-mouth business. And you don't need a promo pack and, 8x10 glossies and, in a MySpace. It just, of course that happens and works for some people, but for most people it's one guy knows another guy and says, oh, yeah, this guy's a good drummer, give him a call, here's his phone number. And that's the way it was anyway in the 70s when I was coming up.
The progression, the way that it was, Steve, and eventually it led you, of course, in 2001 to be named by Modern Drummer magazine as one of the top 25 drummers of all time, and the next year in their Hall of Fame. But as far as steps along the way here, Just like to know what it means to you to be in a band here. I mean, it had been Buddy's, and now it's the Steve Smith's Jazz Legacy, but to be out there playing with Buddy Rich's old bandmates. I mean, I would dare say that, you know, if you were to just ask any music fan of any genre, name one drummer, that's probably the guy that they're going to name is Buddy Rich. So, I mean, if you're out there and you're playing with the guys who are with the man, I mean, just how much does that mean to you on a personal level?
It's exciting, and it's an honor, and I was asked to do that by the Buddy Rich Estate, which is run by his family. And so it was a real honor to be asked to step into those shoes, and I love playing with those musicians. And as you said, it started as Buddy's Buddies, and now it's taken on a life of its own, and we call it Jazz Legacy, because now, you know, not only do we pay tribute to the great Buddy Rich, but we're free to play our own music, and we also acknowledge some of the other fantastic jazz drummers like Elvin Jones and Tony Williams and Philly Joe Jones and Art Blakey and drummers like that, and we play some of their music as well. So we've really developed as a unit.
In terms of your career with Journey, I mean, and you having been there really for the signature years of the band, I mean, I would dare say that, you know, the years that anybody thinks of when they think of Journey, that you were there. I mean, talk about what that was like. I mean, obviously, it's got to be something that was much different from the rest of your career. Just A, it was a different genre, and B, playing the mega arenas and everything like that. How do you see that chapter of your career? Do you look upon it more fondly than some of the other times, or maybe just a little bit differently?
Well, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, of course, when I first joined the band in September 1978, you know, the band was doing okay, but it wasn't very, you know, real popular at that point. We were playing what you'd say theaters, you know, approximately 2,000 seat theaters, and so and they were exactly the same theaters I had played with Jean-Luc Ponty. So it was a move that I made because it was interesting for me musically to try that music and do something different. But within a few years, the band really started to get very popular in a pretty short time, really. So by 1981, our Escape record sold 5 million copies shortly after it came out, and we went from theaters to then, you know, the small indoor arenas that are approximately, say, 15,000 seats to these outdoor sports arenas that are anywhere from 50 to 60, or even, I think, JFK Stadium, we played there a couple times for 90,000 people. So, you know, it was surrealistic in some ways what was going on, and we were sort of in this little bubble with all this activity going around us, and we just sort of went along for the ride, and it was exciting, it was stressful, you know, it was everything, and, you know, everything that you can imagine. And, you know, they've made movies about these type of situations, and some of them are kind of realistic, actually, when you see all the crazy behind-the-scenes stuff and all that.
I can't even imagine what some of the things must have been like. I have to ask you, too. I mean, and I'm dating myself here somewhat by mentioning this, but I had the Journey Escape video game back in the day. How was that in terms of a revenue stream for you guys? I would imagine that had to be a big moneymaker on top of the actual music.
Now, you're talking about the little Atari one?
Yeah, 2600. I'm totally dating myself here.
Yeah, I don't think that was probably any kind of, you know, income.
Okay.
At all. It was probably negligible, really. And then they made an arcade game that was actually never released because there was so many problems between the company that licensed the name and where it eventually ended up. They went bankrupt. So, you know, so it turned out to be kind of a big disaster, really.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, today, in today's situation where the video games are as big as they are now, probably would have been different, but, you know, it was kind of a new thing in those days.
That's true. I mean, you guys were kind of a forerunner in that sense, you know, and I wonder also, too, you know, particularly because you've described you know, aspects of the experience as being surreal, which I imagine that it can be looking back on it here. Just what are some of the kind of thoughts that cross your mind really whenever you guys pop up, you know, when you have over the years or continue to in popular culture here. I mean, you don't even need to go any further back than last year with the Sopranos finale and having the tune come up there at the very end. What are some of the kind of thoughts that cross your mind when just, you know, out of the blue, there's a Journey reference there, because you guys just never seem too far away from people's minds?
I guess I'm, you know, grateful would be the first word that comes to me. It's exciting, and and I'm really glad that the music had the kind of impact that it did, that it still lives on, and that and people, in fact, they're still like it. And not only that, it seems as though there's quite a few new people, like, you know, younger people that are enjoying the music for the first time, and a couple more generations have been turned on to it. So I'm pretty happy about that.
It does continue to reach different generations too. I don't even know. Did you see, or were you aware of the reference in the movie Basketball a couple of years back?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was. Do you happen to know what
which
were
was
Steve
funny?
Curry's
that
thoughts
was
on that?
That was, I thought, a pretty funny movie, and it was actually, they talked about Steve Perry, and I think something like the guy yelled, "Oh, Sherry," or something.
Yeah, like no Steve Perry psychouts. What were,
right.
Do you have,
which actually wasn't a Journey
take
tune.
That in good humor?
You got to remember that. That wasn't a Journey tune.
Right. But that was. I just wonder. You know, did he take that in good humor? Do you think? I mean, I think it was just meant in a joking kind of a way.
Of course it was, but I hope he did. I don't know. I never asked him.
Okay. Yeah. That's. All right, that's, again, you know, whether it be Steve Perry, whether it be Journey, yeah, I mean, you guys keep popping up, you know, again, in popular culture. We've got a question from an emailer here. Damon in C-Town is wondering about your thoughts on the band, since they hired Arnel Pineda to basically be somebody who can mimic Steve Perry and sound just kind of like him. What are your thoughts on the band these days and the sound that they're able to provide?
Well, I think if they're... You know, I guess the way that I see it, those guys, Jonathan and Neil and Ross, they really want to be out on the road playing that music, and so they should be if that's what they want to do. And so they're doing it, and they've found a guy with a great voice, and also the drummer, Dean Castronovo, is a good friend of mine, and I feel like he's a great drummer. Of course, he loves being in the band. And so the guys that want to be in the band are in the band, and they're having a great time. And so as far as I'm concerned, that's great. It keeps the music alive and keeps developing the fans and new fans to enjoy the music. So I'm all for it.
Well said, Steve. And as far as what you talked about before with networking and different circles and everything, I have to ask you, because we had an interview on the station here about a week or so ago, another drummer from the Boston area, the current drummer for Boston, Jeff Neal. Just wondering if you've ever crossed paths with him. I think he does a little bit of instructional stuff, too. Have you ever had an opportunity to work with him or cross paths?
No, I don't know him.
Okay. Just curious. Yeah, you're from the same geographic area. I guess he just joined Boston in the last couple of years. But
well, I haven't heard much from them lately. I mean, they were very ahead of their time when they first came out, but then they sort of disappeared. So that's good to hear that they're back on the map again.
Oh, they really are. Yeah, they're out there. I caught them a couple of years ago in concert, and there's nothing like hearing their stuff from the glory days. Really, the same as you guys too. There's really nothing like. Getting to hear that. As far as everything right now, Steve, and I know you got to go in a minute here, but I want to bring it back around and give you a chance to talk about these clinics, because again, you were here in Cleveland, and I guess you're going to be coming back later in the summer, and as you said, you're going to be hitting the four corners of the earth. So
right.
Please,
well, here's what I would
know
recommend
where they can find out about this.
For people that are interested, go to my website, and my website is vitalinformation.com. I have a fusion band that's called Vital Information, so I got that web address, and at that web address, you know, you can find everything that I'm doing. And what you're referring to in the Cleveland area is I'm going to be doing a 4-day, like you'd call it, drum camp, I guess, a 4-day drum camp. And this is going to be in August, and it's going to be me and four other teachers, well-known drummers, Dave Weckl, who's a great drummer, Horacio Hernandez, and Jamie Haddad. And we're going to be teaching 4 days, and I think you know, up to 120 people can come to this thing. And we did it last year, and we did it in the New York area. This year we're doing it in the Cleveland area, and it's going to be great. They call it the Fantasy Drum Camp, sort of like those, some of those fantasy sports camps or something in a way. But, you know, people get to play with us, and there's a band, and they jam, and my band plays a concert. So that's over the August 23rd through 27th. So just go to vitalinformation.com, and you'll be able to find that information.
That's excellent. I hope people do that. You know what? And we just got another email, Steve, and I know I got to let you go. Last question real quick. So somebody sent us an email. Glenn in Ohio wanted to know your thoughts on Randy Jackson. I guess it's not, you know, commonly, you know, known, but was with Journey back in the day, and, you know, now he's a household name on American Idol. Your thoughts on Randy Jackson?
Well, Randy and I go back way before Journey. In fact, I was the one that got him in Journey, and he was a fantastic, and hopefully still is, a fantastic bass player, and he was a jazz fusion bass player, and we played in a band called the Tom Coster Band together, and we played a lot of sessions around the San Francisco area, and then I introduced him to the guys in Journey, and then, of course, Steve Perry really loved his playing and used him on Street Talk, I think it's called, Steve Perry's solo album. And then Randy actually played a lot of the tracks on Raised on Radio, which is a record we did in 85, and then went on tour for a few months in, I think, 86 or 7. So, yeah, then he went on to be an A&R person for a couple record companies and ended up on American Idol, which is, it's a great gig for him. Fantastic situation, of course.
That's an interesting story there, how he was with you guys. And again, Steve, I mean, your career is full of fascinating stories. You've crossed a lot of genres. You've done it all. You know, you've been named one of the top 25 drummers of all time. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been an honor, Steve, and we would look forward to doing it again.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.